Every time we pick up a newspaper or turn on the radio or television, perhaps the most discussed question of the day is, are we sneaking into socialism? Are the Fair Deal social welfare programs, in fact, socialistic plans as the Republicans charge? Or are they really democratic expressions of the philosophy that means the best government for all Americans? To discuss this very interesting and vital question, we have invited two distinguished statesmen, Congressman Clarence J. Brown of Ohio, one of the most influential Republican leaders in the House of Representatives.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
And Norman Thomas, the noted socialist leader, six times their candidate for President of the United States, Mr. Thomas. Now, Congressman Brown, are we sneaking into socialism?
Well, Mr. Granick, I have to answer that question by saying no, perhaps to the astonishment of Mr. Thomas. We're not sneaking in. We're going in at a dead gallop.
How about that, Mr. Thomas?
Let him proceed. I don't know yet for sure what he's talking about. Let him clarify the issue, and then we'll get on with it.
Clarence, we're looking for clarification.
Well, if a man who has run for president six different times on the socialist ticket doesn't know what I'm talking about, well, I'm afraid it's too late for me to educate you, Mr. Thomas. But whether you call this socialism or what you call it, I don't know what you may call it. You could call it any one of a dozen things. It all comes out of the same bottle, whether it's socialism, communism, fascism, Nazism, or whatever it may be. It's where the state becomes all-powerful and the individual no longer counts.
Mr. Thomas?
I think, to be very brutally frank, that this sort of talk is in itself very dangerous. We're not going to manage our complicated civilization when you talk about fascism, socialism, and communism being the same. When you talk about a movement like socialism, which has proved recently in New Zealand, where it allowed itself very peacefully to be voted out of office, where you've got a movement that cares primarily for the individual and his rights, and you then equate it with the movement of that false renegade Mussolini, or with the communists and their tyranny, you're mixing things up for the confusion of issues and the glorification of those who have power and property and don't want to meet the challenges of democracy.
Congressman Brown?
Well, I'm very happy that the gentleman mentioned New Zealand, and I see in the happenings down in New Zealand last week just a faint ray of hope that perhaps the British-speaking or English-speaking people are beginning to wake up a bit. I hope that we have the same sort of a growing understanding in this country before it's too late, Mr. Thomas. I want to mention to you, however, that I don't know what you call it. I think Hitler called it state socialism, didn't he, or national socialism?
He called it national socialism. It was national, but it was not socialism, and every true socialist was in a concentration camp or driven into exile.
Well, you know, I hate to say this. I used to be Secretary of State out in Ohio and put your name on the ballot every 4 years for president.
Well, they got over it very, very soon, and you created a monopoly in Ohio so that nobody could get on the ballot except the old parties.
That was after I left. If I had my way, you'd be back on the ballot out there. I think the more of these splinter parties we have, the more we can split up the people that don't exactly believe in certain systems, the better off we are.
The more you can split up everybody but Republicans, the better. Is that
right.
It?
That might partially be the answer.
God knows you need some kind of help, and maybe judging by the recent election.
Perhaps God will help us if there is a God in heaven. We can use all the help we can get. But whether you call it socialism or what have you, and I'm not so sure that you actually believe in what many of us feel is socialism. As I've listened to some of your discussions on radio and on the public forum, I'm inclined to think that perhaps you're just about two-thirds a Republican yourself, Mr. Thomas. You hate to admit it, but you come from out in Ohio, from a pretty sound country out there, and as I hear you espouse your beliefs, you're certainly not a socialist, or somebody else isn't a socialist. A lot of other people that I know aren't socialists.
Or possibly you don't understand the system very well that you're talking about.
I certainly don't understand your system, because...
All right, I am not a socialist, although I've been nominated six times for president, because I do not conform to the opinion of an Ohio Republican congressman on what socialism ought to be in order that he can cuss it. Well, that's what it amounts to.
Well, that may be true, but evidently, Mr. Thomas, a lot of other people don't conform to your ideas either.
They don't
whether
vote
they're good
for
or
me.
Bad.
That's
no,
right. They don't vote
right.
for me.
And
in not voting for me, they don't vote for socialism.
And I'm not so sure that they'd be voting for a socialist candidate for president. They might be voting for a socialist platform. But I'm not so sure they'd be voting for a socialist as a candidate for president if they did vote for
Gentlemen, him. Last week, James F. Burns, our former Secretary of State, said he warned us. He said we are threatened with the imposition of creeping but ever-advancing socialistic programs. Would you like to comment on that, Congressman?
Well,
I'm not a member of your party, but I don't know.
I'm glad that Jimmy Burns said that. I heard him make his first speech in which he broke with the national administration down at Washington Lee last June when he said that we would soon become, if we continued to follow the present trend and accepted many of the different programs that had been put forward by the Democratic administration, that we'd all soon become slaves in the galley of the state. And I think that Mr. Burns' idea of what socialism is and mine seemingly agree, so it isn't just all Republicans that feel that way. You may soon find yourself, Mr. Thomas, where you're out of step with everybody except Thomas. I get that way once in a while when I try to march in a parade. I get out of step with the rest of the parade.
Mr. Thomas?
I think it might be a good plan to talk a little reality instead of just general names. Now, let me say very briefly what it is that socialists want, what socialists want in New Zealand and Scandinavia and Great Britain and in the United States. They're not perfect. It doesn't do them too much harm to be defeated once in a while. And their manners prove, as in New Zealand, the complete falsehood of the statement that there's a difference of 5 or 10 years between socialism and communism. Socialists were in office 14 years in New Zealand. They left perfect liberty. They established the beginnings of their system so firmly that every report says the conservatives won't change it. The conservatives, if they're elected in Britain, won't change anything the socialists have done. They just won't do any more. If I am two-thirds of a Republican, Mr. Brown ought now to listen what that means. A socialist in these countries, a democratic socialist, is a man who believes that we live in a time when the only chance we've got of taking care of hunger, of taking care of the conquest of poverty and the prevention of war, yes, and the preservation of liberty, requires us to get together, requires us to exalt as our major principle cooperation and not a so-called laissez-faire free enterprise which has played its role in history.
Brown.
It requires
well,
us. Just a minute. I would like to say what I'm talking about
sorry,
and then
Scott.
Go ahead. I'll keep still a long time if you let me get it out once.
Go ahead.
Socialism then believes that you've got to plan and plan intelligently, that you can't go on doing what the Democrats have been doing and the Republicans and saying we believe in free enterprise and then voting farm subsidies which violate the principle and provide for federal subsidies to housing which violate that principle. Let's be honest about it. Socialists believe that to plan intelligently, the good gifts that God has given us in the ground, the mineral resources and so on, these should belong to all of us and be developed for the common good, that the system of money and banking and credit should be so controlled, that great monopolies and oligopolies should belong to the people, the state, the agent, that they should be administered under directorates representing consumers and the workers. Now, if that's to be two-thirds of a Republican, hooray for the Republican Party. They're nearer grace than I thought.
Go ahead, Congressman.
Well, of course, the Republican Party does. The Republican Party does believe in a little intelligent planning and not in the type of planning that we've had that's been taking us down into socialism. That's what we were talking about.
Only
what's been
what
going on as to whether this country is going into socialism. That's what we've been talking about or are supposed to talk about, not what we believe in is socialism and what isn't and so forth. Now, the fact of the matter is all this planning you're talking about is centered on one idea and one thought, and it's been reaching one goal only, and that's to take away from the people more and more and more of their individual rights and to make the government itself all-powerful and to let a few people who are fuzzy-minded, who are unable to think clearly or straightly, decide what every individual should do in every section of the country or the land, regardless of whether it's right or wrong. Now, that's what's wrong with this whole program, and you know it as well as I do. And you know that that's the reason why the people of New Zealand rejected the program that you're talking about. Now, the program in New Zealand was not well thought out. It was not intelligent planning. It was placing a burden of taxation upon the people so heavy that they could not furnish their own needs and still support their government, and they turned it down cold in the election.
And the conservatives aren't going to change any of their laws. Now let's get on.
Well,
this
I interrupt there just one moment to say that that's one of the troubles and one of the difficulties with this march towards socialism, that you adopt and put into effect programs that's practically impossible to stop. You just can't stop a lot of them after you take them. That's what's wrecked Great Britain. Whenever you start down that slippery slide, Mr. Thomas, there's no stopping halfway. You don't jump out of a 25-story building, you know, and stop halfway down. You finally hit.
Now, look, I have a little time. What's wrecked Great Britain? Great Britain turned socialist after a war from which she emerged victorious. Great Britain turned socialist after her coal mines under private ownership had been recklessly depleted and the machinery was obsolescent. Great Britain turned socialist and provided the best system that could be seen in an emergency for taking care of people so that goods in short supply could be shared and those who needed them could get it. Because Great Britain did what Great Britain did in the face of enormous obstacles, the tide of communism was arrested. Men saw some other hope than the totalitarian state. So successful has the British socialism, in spite of the difficulties of Great Britain and the international economy, so successful has it been that the conservative platform declares explicitly that they will accept all these things. They only criticize the socialists for not giving free drugs to the patients of private doctors. Did we corrupt everybody? No. Do you really think that liberty is denied only when the state, under democratic controls and with democratic institutions, tries to work coal mines and steel mills for the good of the people, and liberty's not denied under the system that's produced the horrors of coal mining villages, under the system that left 200 American businesses control more than 50% of their wealth, under the system of inheritance, under the system of taxation, under the system which denies opportunities to so many people? Let's look at facts.
Congressman Brown, let's look at the facts.
They'd expel you from the House of Representatives because they have a five-minute rule down there, Norman, and you...
That's one of the troubles for the House of Representatives under Republicans and Democrats.
That's right. And if you had it, I suppose everybody would talk 5 hours a day apiece.
Oh, no, 10 minutes.
But,
10 minutes.
Let's go on about Great Britain. That's a great subject to discuss. Of course, you failed to mention here to this audience and to the viewing and listening audience the fact that in Great Britain the tax burden averages 40% of the people's income. You failed to mention, for instance, that today, under this great socialistic government that you have over there, that the people are eating less and are engaged in more difficult living conditions than they've ever had before in all of their history. That these coal mines are producing less coal than they ever produced before. That a lot of your industries that you socialized or nationalized over there that were profitable under private enterprise are now running huge deficits. You fail to mention that the British people today are eating a great deal of the food that they get because of the charity of the people of the United States, and that we've been supporting the British economy by about $1.5 billion a year ever since the war.
Let me ask a question there.
Wait a minute, Matt.
You want to ask a question?
No.
Let's tell the whole story, Mr. Thomas. Tell the rest
of it. All right, let's tell the whole story. There is nothing in the world so outrageously misrepresented as the facts about Britain by people who want to use the British stick to beat the American dog.
That's exactly what Brzezinski says we're doing with Joe Stalin. We're misrepresenting the poor fellow. Actually, at heart, he's a wonderful guy.
And what you say about Britain is exactly what Brzezinski says about Britain and exactly what every fascist says about Britain. You don't argue by quoting people like that. You argue on facts. First, we are helping Britain. Britain stood alone for a long time in a war, and it was immensely to our interest that we should help Britain stand against communism. We'd help Britain if she had a conservative government. Second, the health of Britain has risen. Third, the actual production in Britain has risen more since 1938 than in any country in Europe, about 40%. Agricultural production, 25%. Health, housing, and everything else has been enormously advanced. A great deal more coal is being mined than it was in the last days of private ownership under the dilapidated mines. The government has had to refurbish and set in order industries that were ruined by a combination of war and capitalism, and it has made great progress, such great progress that the conservatives have no intention of changing it. It's only Americans that will.
Let's stick to the facts now.
These are the facts. And I'll challenge anyone to a full-length debate on it.
All right, let's stick to the facts. Now, the facts are, you mentioned coal, for instance, that Great Britain did, prior to the war, produce enough coal not only to take care of all British needs, but also to export coal to Europe. And that since the nationalization of the coal mines, she's not producing enough coal to keep her own people warm.
That is
and
just
she's
not
importing
true.
Coal. Well, it happens.
I'm very
to be
sorry.
True.
You are talking that, about one terrible winter, and you're saying that
well,
that's
I'm
true
talking
now, and
about
it is not.
This winter, for instance.
No, you're wrong.
Let me ask a question. The United States News said British millionaires are getting scarce, and high-income groups are shrinking. These groups are growing large in the United States. Now, doesn't this refute, at least in part, that we are sneaking into socialism? I don't know many millionaires. Do you?
I don't know. I don't know very many millionaires. I didn't know. It's not my understanding that they're increasing in the United States. Now, perhaps some of these people are engaged in lecture tours and things are making enough money to become millionaires, Norman. You'll have to speak for yourself. But I don't know very many millionaires.
That is a joke. You ought to laugh louder. It's so funny.
But I'm sorry if it gets under your skin, old boy, because I respect you very highly, and I won't...
Well, I respect but not what you call facts.
But
gentlemen, it's time for questions from the audience. I see my assistant, Miss Peniel, with a gentleman there with a question. Go ahead, sir.
Does not socialism, with its monopolistic government control, tend to eliminate that initiative which, through competitive capitalism, has been the incentive to produce that better mousetrap with its ever-bettering standard of living? That's to Mr. Thomas.
No, it doesn't. The increase of production in the Scandinavian countries, in Britain, under socialism, in spite of the disadvantages under which they labored, goes far to refute that. No socialist intends to support people without working, not to the extent that you can be supported now if you'd pick the right grandfather or the right share of stock. We intend to have rewards and incentives proportioned to work, and we intend to let people who invent a real good mousetrap get a patent. We then put it under some kind of royalty arrangement.
Are you an expert on mousetraps? Go ahead, Mr. Brown.
Well, of course, the very fact of the matter is that the more government controls, the more the productivity of the country and the various businesses and industries, the more it controls the individual. And that's the trouble with these so-called liberals. And I contend that I'm a real liberal, more of a liberal than Mr. Thomas. I'm so much of a liberal that I want every individual in America and in the world to enjoy liberty. I don't want some government bureaucrat telling him, or me either, what he has to do, what he has to eat, where he has to work, how much his pay shall be, how much he shall contribute to his old age. The government knows better than you do, John. We'll take
That's
your money.
That's a good sentiment.
Did you want to nominate him? Go ahead.
That's a good sentiment, and I want that liberty so much that I don't want to have unrequited unemployment, unplanned depression, illiteracy due to bad schooling, the health due to improper arrangements which could be corrected. I don't want these to handicap the individual. But otherwise, of course, I don't want government telling. I want the people so organized that they'll tell the government. Well, and when we get time, what I want is for Congressman Brown, as a Republican now, never mind whether he's a liberal, to say what welfare legislation he would repeal.
Well, I want to agree, first of all, with you. This may give you a shock. I want to agree with you. I don't want to plan any depression either. And I don't want to plan all of these other things. I don't want to plan or unplan. And
in other words, what welfare legislation that has been passed would you repeal? And what welfare legislation is not socialistic?
Well, I remember how they talked about OPA was for the welfare of the people, and I was for the repeal of that, and we repealed it, and I saw and in fact debated with my friend Chester Bowles 30 days after repealed it, and I didn't hardly know the man. He looked so much healthier. He'd been eating meat for 30 days. Just wonderful. Now, those are some of the things that I want to take off. I want to take a lot of these controls, a lot of these regulations.
All right, I have to say that.
I don't want to see the government saying, you have to do this or that. We're going to compel you to pay in your money in the form of taxes, and then we'll spend it for you to educate you. We'll spend it for you. I don't want the federal government to control the schools of this country, for instance, the educational system. I don't want them to dictate what a man shall do in the way of running his own business so long as he does not interfere with the rights of others.
It has been a minute and 45 seconds since I asked what welfare legislation would you repeal as a Republican. The congressman says he's against OPA, which was an emergency law, not either particularly supported or particularly condemned by socialists. It was a necessity of the war. He has since talked about a great many things, but not answered my question. No one is proposing to turn the public schools over to the federal government to control. But I, for one, am proposing that New York State, for instance, which draws from the nation under our present scheme of things a great deal of money, should have a certain responsibility to see to it that boys and girls in poor states should get a better opportunity for education, without which America does not fare well.
Okay, another question. A young lady there. Go ahead, please.
Congressman Brown, if, as you claim, we are sneaking into socialism, why is it so?
Why is it so?
Yes.
Well, because the president continues to put in this order of regulation under so-called powers, some of which I question, and because the Congress, and there have been a great many Democratic Congresses in recent years, my dear, will vote legislation that gives further authority. For instance, the president's now talking about doing this very same thing that, or wanting the power to do it, that Mr. Thomas has mentioned, that is to put the government into industry, to have the government build all kinds of industrial plants and to run them and to operate them as instead of private business. Now, that's the way we're sneaking into socialism.
Thomas, you want to take that?
No, ask another question.
Go ahead. We'll take another question. Go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Thomas, would a more socialized USA be more in harmony with a communistic Russia and thus lessen the chances of war?
No, it would not be more in harmony. If we lessened the chance of war, it would be by concrete plans. I think there are certain plans that might lessen the chance of war, which I've discussed 1,000 times and can't discuss on this program. But we have no harmony at all with the totalitarian Russian state and its denial of all liberties, denials which have been particularly tough on socialists in Russia.
I'd like to say to the lady that it doesn't make a bit of difference who takes your liberty away from you, whether it's a communist or a socialist. If your liberty and your freedom's taken away from you, you're no longer free. You know, freedom is a sort of an indivisible thing or indivisible thing. You can't take away a part of a man's freedom and still permit him to remain free. He's lost something. And it don't make any difference whether it's Norman Thomas type of socialist or whether it's Joe Stalin's type of communist that takes your liberty away from you.
Thomas wants to answer that. Go ahead.
And this is positively dangerous if you think, therefore, that conditions in New Zealand, which has just voted out of office a socialist government in their 14 years, are the same as in Russia. It's just not so. Furthermore, it depends a good deal on what you mean by liberty. I do not think that it is an inalienable liberty that we should live under a system where, by reason of inheritance or the chance absentee ownership of a large share of a natural resource, we should be able to get so much while other people get so little. I think the right to know, to utter, and to argue freely, according to conscience, these are the things that matter. And I'll challenge any Republican to show the record we socialists, few as we may be, have shown in America in defending the right to meet, the right to organize, the right to speak, the right to a fair trial.
Well, I challenge the gentleman to show any Republican in America that has been opposed to those rights and freedoms that have been set forth in the under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Of course not. Neither you or I or any worthwhile Americans against it.
A Republican Justice of Peace once held me under $10,000 bail for asserting the right to speak at a labor meeting. In the end, I won. It was a long, slow process, and he was a Republican.
There's a gentleman in the audience.
Well,
I don't know whether
he voted for you or not.
And the other one was Haig, and he was a Democrat.
Go ahead, sir. You have a right to speak.
Congressman Brown, is giving aid to help an unemployed man to reestablish himself a move towards socialism or better Americanism?
No, I don't think that is a move toward socialism in itself. I know many, many industries, including my own little small business out in Ohio, that has helped people get reestablished and employed. Private industry does that. Private individuals do it. But whenever you set up a system where a government said, we'll take the money away from those who are employed and give it to people who don't want to be employed, who don't want to work, who want to loathe, then that's not fair.
fair, and that's not right. And that's what we do when we get into this planned economy, which is socialism or some kind of ism. I don't care what you call it. It's just not Americanism.
Yes, Mr. Thomas.
Nobody has proposed to take, no socialist has proposed to take money from workers who are working to support workers who won't work, except at a perhaps level of existence. This is part of the business of speaking in averages. 40% goes in of tax money is taken in England, but it's taken from those who can best afford to pay it. I think that resembles Christianity in sharing.
I'm sorry, John. We just have time for summaries. Go ahead, Congressman. Use that time for your summary.
Well, of course, I'm going to summarize right here and right now on that the very thing that he was talking about will be my summary. Whenever you get into government-controlled economy, you get government doing what it's doing today. It's taking money away from the employed, taxing the production of the worker in this country, and turning around and giving it to people who don't want to work in many, many areas of this nation today. Now, let's look at it a minute. We had a depression. We had a depression back here in the 30s, and we were spending, out of the federal government at that time, $1 billion. Now, that's back in 34. We spent $735 million for the unemployed. In 1948, we spent $1,727,000,000, in spite of the fact that we had the greatest employment in the history of our country. We had over 60 million people employed and the greatest prosperity that we ever had. Now, that's exactly what happens when you get state control and when you get some form of socialism, whether it's your form or somebody else.
I'm sorry, Congressman Brown. Your summary, Norman Thomas.
Socialism, to Congressman Brown, consists in those welfare measures that he doesn't like. He has not answered my brief but nevertheless fairly comprehensive description of what socialism seeks. He has not said what laws he would repeal, whether he would have no schools, because that also takes money from people with no children to educate the children of the country. He's answered not one of these practical questions. There's nothing easier, especially when times are fairly prosperous, especially in a year when there is some provision for the unfortunate, which Republicans and Democrats had at last to give along socialistic lines. In these times, it's easy to talk about statism and taking money away from people, and to get a certain applause for it. But the practical facts of life are, what are you going to do about unemployment and its hurt? What are you going to do about preventable disease? What are you going to do about bad housing? Yes, and what are you going to do about war? That's where our money goes now, mostly to war in preparation for it.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Our speakers were Congressman Clarence J. Brown of Ohio and Norman Thomas, the noted socialist leader, discussing, Are We Sneaking Into Socialism?
For reprints of today's discussion, send 10 cents to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington 18, D.C.